Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. This episode is all about writing, something I know many of us have goals of doing more of during our sabbatical. My guest is Dr. Anna Clemens. Anna is an academic writing coach who runs the Researchers Writing Academy, an online program for researchers who want to develop a structured writing process to get published in top-tier journals. It's her company's mission to make academia a more diverse and joyful place for researchers from all backgrounds. Anna has a PhD in materials science and a master's degree in chemistry. Previously, she also worked as a science journalist and published articles in Scientific American and other popular science magazines. In this conversation, Anna talks about how she helps academics in the natural sciences write better articles through the use of storytelling techniques. Anna has a signature process that pulls back the curtain on academic writing, and she offers lots of resources to academics who want to write more, publish more, and be in community with others while they do it. I hope you find something that you can use from this conversation and that you'll check out Anna's website to learn more. Enjoy the show. Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for being on Sabbatical 101 today.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to it.
So before we get started hearing about your coaching programs, could you just start by introducing yourself, share a little bit about your academic background, and then just tell us kind of broadly what you do?
Of course. So I'm Dr. Anna Clemens. I run a program called the Researchers Writing Academy, and I call myself an academic writing coach. I also do workshops for universities, talks, and for events and things like that, all about academic writing and how to write scientific papers that are good and to do the whole process time efficiently. And my academic background is in chemistry. So I did a PhD in chemistry and material science. And then after that, I transitioned into writing. So I was first a science writer slash journalist for a little while, learned kind of the ropes a little bit about that, and then transitioned into more academic writing again as an editor and also as a consultant, and yeah, then eventually founded the Researchers Writing Academy.
Okay, great. And so what led you to this interest in science writing and to your focus on writing? Because I could imagine as a person who is a chemist and in material science, there are many other directions you could have gone with a PhD.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I didn't reflect on this so much, funnily enough, because for me, it was pretty clear at the end of my PhD, I wanted to do something with writing. It was just when I was kind of looking back at what I liked doing. I mean, I did like research a lot as well, but I also found it incredibly frustrating because you would do like an experiment and then you would check the results and then you would notice something went wrong. I have to redo this. Mm-hmm. Or you would just run something. And then you made a mistake, or the machine had a problem, or there was something, or maybe like you were just thinking about the whole thing in the wrong way and what you did didn't make any sense. Yeah, I just found that a little bit too annoying about research, but I really liked writing about it. So I did actually really enjoy doing my PhD to write articles. Also, I did my PhD in Sweden, so we also did a licentiate thesis, which is kind of halfway through. And it's like a bit like a mini PhD. And I think it's honestly quite a good idea because you get to write a thesis. It's shorter, but you kind of learn how to do it a little bit. You have a bit of a defense, all the things. Anyway, writing that and also the articles in my PhD thesis was just really, really fun. Like, and it was kind of funny because I guess I always liked writing, but until that point, I never really quite realized just how much I liked it. And also that I was really quite good at it because I would then start like colleagues like would come and be like, oh, really? You enjoy this? Are you having such a good time? And they would ask me to do edits on their papers or their theses. Mm-hmm. And I just love that. So yeah, that's kind of why. So I was just thinking, what do I enjoy the most? Writing. Okay. I also like science. So what can I do? Science and writing. I guess science writing. That's mm-hmm. when I got started.
Yeah. Well, that's such a great story. And I think it's so great that you recognize early on that that was the niche you wanted to be in, the place you wanted. And I will say, as an aside, my husband is a molecular biologist. And so this doing the experiment over and over again, and, you know, we're always kind of like waiting with bated breath, you know, like, did it work? And it's like, no, actually, I need to tweak this thing, or I need to read this paper about this thing that I didn't realize. And I mean, it's incredibly rewarding when it does work, but it's frustrating too.
It really is. It really is. I admire people who do this as their career, their whole lives, because I find it so, so draining.
Yeah. And I think from what I see, like, my husband, not that he doesn't get frustrated, but he likes that, you know, being in that space and problem solving. Mm. But when it comes to the writing, that's a different story. And I think from what I observed from his PhD program was that from the first year, you're in the lab, you're doing research, and then all of a sudden at the end, you have to write this dissertation. And it's like, you get thrown into it, and there's not necessarily a lot of development as a writer along the way. And so what you offer is a solution to academics who might have been in that situation, who have been really focused on the research. But of course, in academia, our currency is journal articles. And so in order for people to know about our research, we have to write about it. So could you talk a little bit more about your services and what kinds of support you provide for academics?
Yeah, of course. Also, I just wanted to say, I think this experience that your husband made, or that you observed in his PhD program, is incredibly common across the world. I think there are some programs that offer also academic writing classes and a little bit more feedback along the way. But even that, from what I've seen, it's often not so helpful. I mean, it's helpful in a sense, but maybe not so effective, because often from what I've observed, these kind of courses focus a lot on like academic English. So it's a lot about, okay, like what are good phrases to use? What's the grammar? And also they teach pretty obvious stuff sometimes, I think. And I think what kind of gets totally overlooked is this, like, okay, I have my data now and I'm supposed to write an article that ideally gets published in a nice journal. So how do I take a set of data, like literally a table or a graph or something, and turn it into that article that actually people want to read and that people want to have in their journal and that peer reviewers look fondly? And so this is the process that I'm teaching. So I really saw this gap that nobody was really teaching academics and scientists how to take their data and turn that into an article. And this is like, so I have an online course called the Journal Publication Formula that is the core of the Researchers Writing Academy, where I recorded lessons that take you step by step through that process. So, okay, I have my data. What's the first step? And a lot of people then, just because they get told to write a paper, what they do is they open a document and start writing.
Write the introduction and go from
there. Yeah, exactly. A lot of people start from the start because, of course, that seems to make sense. But that's actually not very time efficient, I found, because it leads to you producing a draft that you just don't have to edit and edit and edit all over again. A lot of scientists actually think that this is normal, just having like these loads of rounds of editing on their own and with co-authors. Yeah. That's just normal, that's just the way to write. And I have experience now through working with researchers for quite a few years that you can do it a different way, and that is by first, like, okay, looking at your story, let's think first, take your data and let's have a think. What do we want to say? What's our take home message with this? What's our central thesis, like the central argument? What problem are we solving? Let's look at the literature. You probably, when you're writing the article, you kind of more or less know, unless you're super new to the field, what the literature looks like. And then, yeah, you can define a little bit of, well, where does this all fit in? And so I kind of walk researchers through that whole process. Okay, first think about this, now think about this, and giving them kind of prompts along the way to like transform it. So yeah, that's what we do in the Researchers Writing Academy. So the online course is sort of the like knowledge portion. And then I did air quotes. I don't know why I did that. It's the knowledge portion. And then we also noticed that, you know, just having an online course isn't quite enough because it's kind of hard to know, like, when should I watch it? Like, I have all the information here, but I mean, I know it from myself that I buy programs or buy courses and then it takes me a long time to, until I watch them or sometimes yeah. I don't ever.
Or you don't. 100%.
I know. I mean, it's so bad, but, and you spend money on them and you feel really guilty and we really didn't want that for our members. So we designed a lot of other program features around that so that you have weekly accountability. So we have a space where our members can every Sunday or Monday can write, okay, what are my plans for the week? And then on Friday, we check back in with them. Hey, how did it go? And in a really like kind and loving way, like it's not at all this like go-getter culture, I guess. It's a lot about like our kind of ethos is really like, let's take like setbacks as data, like let's learn about our process. Oh, we didn't get this writing done this week, even though we planned for it. Okay, what went wrong? Like really analyzing, like we're always inviting members to reflect, like, oh, your kid got sick. Oh, but this is really good to know that your kid may get sick, right? It's winter, so probably more often than not, this will happen. Okay, how can we change the writing routine? How can we adapt your plans for the future so you account for that? Because you will only get done what you get done anyway, so better not beat yourself up at the end.
Right.
But make like a nice realistic plan for it. So we help with that. And we also have co-rating where we meet. We now have 6 per week. So we work across time zones because we have members from the US, from Europe, also from Australia and Asia. So we offer 6 sessions in a week across time zones so that everyone can at least attend one or probably way more to really sit with other members and one host from my team. And yeah, just write. I'm having a meeting in your calendar. I mean, that's just so, so effective, we found, to show up because then you can tell others, no, I can't do this. There's a meeting in there. Because when we're just putting writing in our calendar with ourselves, I mean, we all probably have experienced that. It's really hard to show up for that and to really defend that time. Yeah, we do other events too. I just picked out a few things, but we're really trying to, we'll have this really like nice community around writing that's really like supportive and just there for you as you then implement the journal publication formula, kind of the step-by-step that we teach.
Yeah. So would the way someone enters your community be that they purchase the journal publication formula and they work on that and then they join the community? Or do they join the community and then say, oh, there's this other thing I could use? Or is it a mix of both?
It's actually just one thing. So you cannot like just join the online course, but we have it all like you join the Researchers Writing Academy and then you can determine how much you want to engage, like you want to just take the course. I mean, we have members who just take the online course. They're super quiet and just do it on their own. And then we have members who really engage with the other things we offer a lot more and they become a real part of the community.
Yeah. And so what kind of results do people see?
I mean, what we definitely see is that people get published. So that's incredibly nice. We have a space in the academy for posting wins. And it's so lovely when people tell us that they got their paper published. And it's also nice to see what kind of journals they get published in. I mean, it's not even everyone's goal to get like into a high impact journal, but it's really, really cool when people do. And we had a member once too who did really interesting research on like methane emissions. And I was like, oh, I'm bet this will get picked up by the press. And it did. It was so cool. It really made the waves. And like she got picked up in loads of like Times Magazine and Reuters had like a feature on it and things like that. Because yeah, when you write things a lot more accessible to your peers, it also becomes more accessible to the press and to the public, because they get it. They get what the significance of the research is. So that's really fun. What also happens is that researchers take the framework, the storytelling framework, and apply to other things. So what we hear a lot is like, we had a member the other day who said to me, oh, I used this for my interview, a job interview. And I was supposed to write as an assessment test or something, a research proposal on a certain topic. And she said, oh, I used the storytelling framework and it was so great. It helped me so much. And I got such good feedback on it and she got the job. So, for abstract writing, that's super common, that as people write like abstracts for conferences, that they use it. And it's just really handy to have in your toolbox whenever you're communicating, really. And as for the accountability portion and the whole community portion, I mean, the big thing there that we see is that people start enjoying writing. Mm-hmm. And I think in the beginning, I would never even promote that. Like, I would never even speak about that because I kind of felt like, oh, who like cares? But it is such a big thing for people because, and partly I'm not realizing quite how emotional it is for people when they really struggle with writing articles. Like it really sucks the life out of them. It impacts other areas of their lives. So when you suddenly not only don't mind writing anymore, but actively enjoy it, look forward to it, that's just so beautiful. I'm just really, really happy that this is happening because it feels, we're spreading joy.
I love this focus on storytelling because it sounds like the way one might approach writing up an article is to think about it as reporting the data. And so I can imagine too that taking a storytelling approach makes the writing process more enjoyable, just to think about what is the story I want to tell with these data as opposed to how am I going to report this? Reporting just sounds pretty dry. Your reflection that people are enjoying the writing process, that to me sounds so important because it feels like you're helping create this positive feedback loop, right? People are not just powering through it. I can imagine there's a huge benefit to making that an enjoyable process and one where people not only enjoy it, but they feel like they're really competent at it and they're confident that what they're doing is going to be effective. And like you said, getting them published and getting them published in high impact journals, if that's their goal. So that's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is this positive feedback loop. I mean, even in the small, not even once you get an article published, because I even often think we kind of think this will feel really good, but then it has taken so many months of writing and then months of like getting it published, you know, you do the peer review and there's like small kind of milestones. And we always encourage our members, hey, let's celebrate. You submitted it. That's great. I mean, that is not even a small milestone. Like you got peer review feedback. Amazing. Like that's what but we celebrate. There's so many little accomplishments that then once it's accepted, it's almost anticlimactic. And we're like, okay, I guess it's there now. Good. But it's like, intellectually, we are like happy, but it's sometimes hard to feel it. And I think what's often more important is to have this like positive feedback loop in your day to day so that every day or every week you like think about, okay, what do I want to achieve this week? Or what do I want to achieve in this writing session, right? Let's say we write today. What do I want to achieve? Oh, I want to edit this paragraph. Okay. At the end of the session, have I edited this paragraph? Is it done? Yes. Cool. Well, that's a positive feedback loop. I'm not happy with that paragraph. I'm really trying to derive the joy out of the things we do every day and the process instead of the big accomplishment, because that often doesn't even feel as good as we think it will feel.
Yeah. And well, I think because in part, once you get the thing accepted, you're like, oh, now I need to go work on the next thing, right? So it's not really, it's your true signal that now it's time for the next article to be submitted, or you've already been working on the next one. So I'm curious, what is something that you wish all academics knew about writing or about the writing process? You've given us a lot to think about, but if you had to give one little nugget of advice or insight, what would it be?
It's really, really hard just to say one thing. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I already mentioned, though, is that there is a process. Like you can follow a process and you don't have to start with the introduction section and then just go through endless editing loops. But as for a more tangible tip, I think what I would say is think about the problem your research is solving and try to nail this, because this is what's going to be your story. The biggest part of storytelling is that we need a conflict or tension. Like when you kind of think about any story, really, or like maybe not like art house cinema, but like anything that you watch on Netflix or in the cinema, things like that, right? There is one big thing and also other smaller things that are creating this tension. And we need that in a scientific article too. So if you want more people to read it, and if you want have higher chances to get it published, because we're just humans, so we really love stories and we really can process information a lot better when it's told as a story. So you kind of need to start at the point that your reader cares about. Like you need to dock onto kind of the knowledge that they already have and present them with a problem on the information that they already have. So that's how I teach writing an article. So really, really nailing down this problem and really taking your time with it. Like if it takes a week until you're there, then that's totally worth it. Mm-hmm. If you have it phrased in a really nice way and it can just be one sentence, or I recommend it's just one sentence, and then you can write more around it. And that's great for your introduction section. That's really great to put that in there. Then I think you will make your article a lot stronger.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And I think it also makes sense that sometimes this is really hard. It seems like a very straightforward thing. Identify the problem, and then ultimately you're showing your reader how what you found solves that problem or contributes to a different way of understanding the problem or a new direction. But I think sometimes when you're in the research, you're so close to it that it seems so obvious. And it's like, well, everyone knows this thing. So obviously this is why I'm doing these experiments, and this is why this finding matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as you say, it sounds like it's like advice that's easy. Well, that sounds easy, but to do it is actually not easy. Or to do it well, because what then a lot of writers do when they hear this advice is they go, like they write something like, oh, not much is known about topic X. And that's not a good conflict. Like that's not a good problem.
So my listeners are mainly thinking about their sabbaticals, and sabbatical can just be a really great time to get some writing done in a focused way. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to get a lot of writing done during their sabbatical?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what I would say is that, I mean, I think the biggest mistake I think that people make when they have a bit more time that they think, oh, this would be great for writing, because a little bit of this also happens during summers often. It's when often the teaching load is lighter and we have like 2-3 months or something. And we're like, oh, I'm going to like clear my backlog. And obviously the sabbatical is a great time if you want to use it to get research published. I think it's a fantastic time. But I think we need to be careful to not, and I think this is also what you help people with in a great way, to kind of make realistic plans and to not overcommit. I'm always for really taking a realistic look at, okay, how much time do I have? So to really go and write it all out. Like, when do you want to be on vacation? How much do you want to rest? Like, you don't just want to like write 8 hours a day. And honestly, we can't. Nobody can write 8 hours a day. And you won't be able to do this for a whole year. So don't even try to do that. But rather think of a more realistic writing schedule, I think. And when you write a lot, when you focus a lot, you need more rest. And especially if you're not used to it, like if your day has kind of a different structure to it normally, you may not even realize just how draining writing will be, because you're using your brain at really high cognitive function. So it's I don't know, if you've taught a class several times, right, I can imagine that for a lot of people that isn't so intense anymore. Or right. For some, it may be, but just as an example. Or sitting in a meeting that you don't really care about and you're just sitting there, you know. Or writing an email usually isn't that cognitively demanding. So mm-hmm. you can't spend all that time that you normally spend on other things on writing. That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
And also, as you do something very cognitively demanding, you need to plan more rest. So basically, the more you focus, the more you need to rest. So you really need to have, I think, a really good plan of when am I going to take time off, when I'm not going to write, and also try not to think about writing. I mean, it will come up automatically, but also letting your kind of subconscious work on some things on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So to have like, I like doing things that are really different as a break from writing. Like, I think spending time with kids is like amazing for that because they like suck in your attention. You're so 100% focused on them and you can use your brain in a different way with them. Or also a hobby. I mean, it can be different things, but to know things that kind of counteract that super intense focus that you need for writing. And I think otherwise, planning is everything, right? Make a realistic plan. Break projects down into smaller tasks so that you know the step-by-step. I mean, this is really what I'm trying to do in the journal publication formula, giving you that. Okay, like, first do this, then do this, then mm-hmm. do this. I mean, try using a project management program, I think. Like, I use mm-hmm. Trello, and we use Trello in the course as well. And we have some, like, templates, some boards to use, because I think it's just, yeah, so effective being able to like check things off, have it all laid out, like everything that's yeah. kind of part of writing down all the steps, because there are a lot of steps, and once you know how many they are and also how long each step is going to take you approximately, that will give you some kind of idea of how long the whole article is going to take you. Yeah. And when you know how much time you have available, you kind of know how many articles you're realistically able to get finished in that time. So I'd really approach it quite strategically, quite, mm-hmm. like quite systematically. And the last thing that I think is important is having community, because I think, I mean, maybe some people manage to like just write on their own and like, but I also imagine a sabbatical is potentially a little bit lonely.
Yeah.
Because you are just more or less on your own. You don't have your colleagues around you in the same way. And I think trying to find people to meet up with to co-write is incredible. And I know some people do this also locally so that they find other colleagues or friends even that they can meet either in person or on Zoom or something.
Yeah.
To co-write. Or if you join a program like the Researchers Writing Academy, where we have a lot of that happening. But trying to find some kind of community so you're not doing this all on your own, because I think that's just, it's just hard.
Yeah. And I think you're right that sabbatical, I mean, there are all these opportunities, but a lot of people I talk to do worry about feeling isolated. And, you know, if I don't have these regular interactions with my colleagues and I don't have, there's kind of no accountability, because in a normal life of an academic, you have to prepare for your classes, you have meetings, you have students. And so when you take all that away, it's like, great, you have this open swath of time, but then a lot of people feel concerned about how to structure it. And what if I, you know, what if things go off the rails? And so I think having mm-hmm. an accountability group or someone you co-write with can help. You're not replacing all of the normal structures, but you're giving your time a little structure and you have someone that you're checking in with regularly. Well, Anna, I really enjoyed hearing more about the services you offer to academics and how you think about writing, because I think it's really great insight. If people want to work with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, thank you. So the best way is to just type in annaclemens.com. So annaclemens.com. And there's a free training, a webinar that you can join and just see. I'm kind of walking you through the journal publication formula in there so you can understand a little bit more what all the steps are and if the Researchers Writing Academy could be a good fit. Or you can find me on YouTube. I think we're called the Researchers Writing Academy. I have a podcast too, the Researchers Writing Podcast. That's on YouTube and also, you know, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's, I guess, the best ways to learn more. And happy to, for anyone to get in touch if you have any questions, happy to answer.
Yeah, and we'll put those links in the show notes because I know I have a last name that's hard to spell. So I always rely on someone actually clicking something. Yours is much easier. But in case people didn't get that, we'll put some links in the show notes so they can find you.
Thank you
so much, Anna. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I'm so happy that you're doing the work that you're doing to support academic writing.
Thank you, Bethany. This was a lot of fun.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.